Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life, another lockdown special. I'm joined by Rupert. How you doing, mate?
Good. I like the enthusiasm of another lockdown special.
Well, I just thought because it's so shit, if you try and put some stank on it, it might, you know, I might be able to muster up some enthusiasm about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's another lockdown. We're trapped, but we're able to bring this, you know, like that sort of.
I'm feeling better already with that approach. I like it. Thank you.
Well, look, it's very exciting today because we are joined by. Look, the word legend is thrown about a fair bit, isn't it? But. Yeah. In this instance, it's absolutely deserved. We are joined by the legend that is Shaggy. Hello, mate.
What an intro.
I don't know. So people get upset these days when they hear legend, though. They're like, oh, what are you trying to say? You trying to call me a has-been? Is that what you're saying? Because that's what legend is, kind of like,
you've been in the game.
Kind of a nice way of saying, okay, you were dead.
Well, I sort of think... I obviously didn't mean it that way, but you know, like, it's very rare that you call someone a legend and it starts to make things awkward. It's not happened to me before.
Except with me.
But I remember, like, when I started doing stand up comedy, like when you start coming out doing new bits and pieces, I was desperate to hold on to up and coming as a descriptor for me. Whenever like anybody referred to me, up and coming, new, exciting, like I wanted to hold on to that as long as I possibly could, man. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you don't want to.
And now you're just a legend.
Well, that's the thing. I'm now kind of somebody who feels like his creative force is spent without having achieved legendary status. So I'm kind of just, my best days are behind me and I'm just sort of waiting for the end, really. But that's not the case for you, Shaggy. That's absolutely not the case for you, mate.
Listen, it's not the case for any of us. I mean, if you look what happened just recently last night on Super Bowl in America with Tom Brady, where everybody's writing this guy off. Yeah, he's old now. And he left and went to another team. Went to a team that didn't make the playoffs, got them there, and then won.
Yeah.
And he's the old guy.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, in the game of making music where I'm at, you know, you always admit these people. Oh, well, you're not this, you're not. Nah, they can't stop me now. So he's been an inspiration. And you, my man, should really take that as an inspiration. Because now you're seasoned as a comic.
Okay,
you're not up and coming anymore.
Yeah,
you have arrived.
That's good. Yeah, all right. That's good.
A lot of people just say weathered in relation.
Weathered.
Yeah, weathered.
Yes, you're weathered. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for chipping in with that, mate. It's nice. With that in mind, do you feel like, you know, what is your sort of goal? Like, do you feel like, you must feel like you've achieved everything that you want to achieve, right? So like, if you were to retire tomorrow, bearing in mind that we're talking to you now when you're in a recording studio, so that's not likely to happen. But if you were to retire tomorrow, would you feel like I've done everything I set out to do? Or do you feel like you've still got some unachieved goals that you want to go for?
I have never felt like this is it. It is mind-boggling to me the hunger I have. I myself don't understand. I will sit here and I'll be like, okay, I'll have a reflection. And I'll go off on one of my little retreats with my wife and get my little Zen mode and says, okay, I've achieved such and such. Why don't I sit and enjoy it? And the minute I'm back home, I'm bored. I'm like, shit, I got to get something done. I got to be at it, you know, and I'm competitive and I'm listening to everybody. And I'm like, I could do this better than you. You know, I mean, it's that, it is so annoying. You know, I just can't stop. I might need therapy to stop, to be honest with you.
How long does that window last before you sort of accepted your boredom and you want to just, you know, crack on?
No, because I find something to do that is exciting.
Straight away.
And that's why I keep changing and doing things. You know what I mean? It's like, and I think of the most random thing, you know, like I'm sure when everybody saw me and Sting was here, it was like, what the fuck? I mean, but just the fact that y'all said, what the fuck, was what excited me. And then I found a kindred spirit. Like, he is the same fucking way. He's like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, they don't think this is gonna work. They don't even know what this is about. Let's do it. I mean, we're so fired up. You know, I just put out a Christmas dancehall album. I'm seeing everybody from Mariah Carey now. I was like, yo, I'm gonna put out a dancehall Christmas record. And I put it out and everybody looking at me all strange, like, what the fuck is he doing? Are they gonna be playing Bounty Killer in the middle of on Christmas Day on the fucking tree? You know, is this really going to happen? Yes, it did. And they loved it. You know what I mean? And people were looking at me like, yeah, what the fuck? Get up, never seen a Santa Claus. No piece of that, we're not going to celebrate it just because. Big sound stream up in the land. Everybody out the road, you see them dance and I carry on. Me and my friend, I beat a case of Guinness. Christmas time, we have a change and we are spinning. Everything we push to the limit. One life we have on this Christmas, we're gonna live it. We got them trees. So it's things like that that I do. It streamed well, it did well. And I'm like, you know, or I come out with Banana. And people look like, what the? Banana, the old Banana. And oh, it's a billion streams. You know, yeah. So it's always things, I find things to excite me other than that I'm bored. And you'll never get bored of me before I get bored of me, by the way.
Right. But how are you, how do you, obviously, like, if you're creatively driven to do something new, which you're constantly, I mean, you've had so many albums now, like 12, 13 albums, is it?
And then not I lost count. I don't even count albums anymore, man. I just go.
So do you have, when you put that stuff out, are you putting it out thinking, well, I've made this and I'm happy with it, so that's all I had to get from this? Or do you then, I mean, you talked about how many streams you're getting and stuff. Does that affect you? Is that part of the goal process to see how well it does?
I'm in this for greatness. Fuck yeah. I want to be competitive. You know what I mean? And if I take my losses like that too, like if I put out something and it didn't quite connect, you know, I take that L and move it from loss to lesson. Okay. And I analyze it thoroughly. I'm like, okay, what did I do wrong here? What was I missing? You know, and I take that into whatever else is going. But that's part of the process that, like, losing also is part of the process because it's not boring to lose. I'm allergic to boredom. That's my problem. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So even losing is not boring. It's worrisome. It's risky. It's gets your pulse going. It gets your palms sweaty. It's not boring. It's nerve-wracking at times.
Yeah.
You know, but it is not boring. I do not want boredom. I don't like boredom. Because life is short. This moment we're having between you and me, we'll never have again. So we got to, the worst thing somebody could do to you is waste your time.
Yeah.
That's worse than them taking money from you.
But it is possible that you make a record, you put it out, it doesn't do well, but that's not because the record wasn't good. That's because you were ahead of your time, or it was, do you know what I mean? The moment was different or whatever, right? I mean, that is a possibility, right?
Shaggy, the record is never not good. Yeah. What are we talking about here? Yeah, I've made lemonade with fucking lime, bro. Come on. Fuck out of here, yo. You know, I made a number one record in 1993 in a genre that didn't exist on radio with O Carolina, and it became a fucking earworm to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, he's a one-hit wonder, he'll never do it again. And I came with another one called Boombasting, which was another fucking earworm. And it was the first time in the history of dancehall or reggae that it debuted at number one in the British chart. And I did it three times after that again with Angel, It Wasn't Me. Right? And the Hot Shot album all debuted at number one. Dude, you don't make this shit up. I'm good at this shit. You don't want to see me kick a ball, though. You do not want to see me kick a ball. I can tell you that. You know what I mean? I'm not going to balance my checkbook good. I can tell you that straight out. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing there. You know what I'm saying? But when it comes to writing a song and making this shit and doing this music shit, I know this shit.
So we're obviously a hip hop podcast, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about was what you think about the relationship with like between dancehall and hip, with regards to toasting and rapping and stuff like that. And is that part of the thing that's made you a hip hop fan, or do you see the connections between those two, or do you see them as completely disparate? What's your take on that?
It's funny, you know, because hip hop. I mean, you know the history. I'm not telling you. You're a hip hop dude, so you know the history of hip hop coming from the origins of dancehall with Kool Herc and all of that out of the Bronx. Okay, yeah. So we know that story, you know. But what a lot of people might not want to admit is that dancehall records became popular on mainstream radio based on hip hop remixes or hip hop fusions or hybrids, so to speak, of dancehall. I mean, if you listen to some, when songs started to chart, like a Shabba Rankin, Slow or Sexy, or Maxi Priest, House Call, or any of these songs, Mr. Loverman, those drums are hip hop drums. If you listen to It Wasn't Me, it's a hip hop beat. The only reggae on that or dancehall on that shit is me saying, you know, it's the dialect of dancehall.
Yeah.
So there's an incredible marriage between dancehall and hip hop. And I was in New York out of Flatbush doing dancehall at the time. So I was heavily influenced by hip hop. You know, Special Ed went to Erasmus Hall with me. You know, I knew Dougie Fresh very well. I was a big fan. Slick Rick was Jamaican. So a lot of Jamaicans really bought into what Slick Rick was doing at the time. LL Cool J was right there in Queens, not very far. It all came out of that whole vibe, you know what I'm saying? So the influence is definitely there. But it works both ways because a lot, again, you know, the hip-hop, the whole starting of hip-hop with Kool Herc came from toasting, which is a dancehall thing, which was the origins of dancehall.
And there was like a time, wasn't there, like you're talking about with... when dancehall and hip hop were, you know, there were so many dancehall hip hop crossover tunes and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And like, there were dancehall artists that hip hop fans would listen to. Like, you know, you think about like Supercat was like so massive on the hip hop scene, and
absolutely,
you
know,
get a red, like,
get a red.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes a backer, some of them a rally back. We a road boy, you tell we no take back no chat. Sometimes a backer, some of them a rally back. But we a road boy, you tell we no take back no chat. You full of big chat and can't defend that. If a jailhouse you come from, we sending you go back. You full of big chat and can't defend that. If a Bellevue you come from, we sending you go back. Cause with them,
Salaam Remy remixed that, you know, yeah. and even tour by Capleton, which was done by Lil Jon.
But that Capleton was like, Funkmaster Flex played that, and it was like big in hip hop clubs that they would drop tour. So
Massive, the Tunnel played that shit regular. Yeah.
So they're definitely intertwined. I think, you know, they've got a close relationship.
Here's a little bit that we like to call, how did you get into hip hop?
What was the earliest sort of hip hop you got into? What was the album that brought you in?
When I was in high school, Lottie Dottie from Slick Rick was the anthem in my school.
You know what? Yo, peep this. Lottie Dottie, we like to party. We don't cause trouble. We don't bother nobody. We're just some men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic. For all of y'all, keeping y'all in health. Just to see you smile and enjoy yourself. Cause it's cool when you cause a cozy condition, Anna, that we create. Cause that's our mission. So listen to what we say. Because this type of shit, it happens every day. I woke up.
It just dominated. You know, it was an urban thing. It was every kid. Slick Rick was like, or God. And then he came with The Great Adventures of Slick Rick. And that album mesmerized me. I was just taken on a journey. When he says like bedtime stories or any of these joints, I was taken on a journey, a lyrical journey that was cinematic in a way, because he wrote cinematic. You know, these were stories that was relatable to you as a kid hustling in Brooklyn at the time, you know, and doing everything possible to get you arrested. And if you didn't, you were lucky.
Once upon a time, not long ago, when people wore pajamas and lived life slow, where laws were stern and justice stood, and people were behaving like they ought to good, there lived a little boy who was misled by another little boy, and this is what he said. Me and you tonight, we're gonna make some cash, robbing old folks and making the dash. They did the job.
So, he was one of my first, and then, you know, I got into like Chubb Rock was another big, you know, when he came with that one record, I loved that. A lot of Brooklyn MCs, you know what I mean? Like, LL was dope, but got my radio, a couple of joints were from LL for me, you know what I mean? And then he started going into the lick your lips type of...
That's what the LL stands for.
Yeah, the lick your lip type of chick records. And now at that point, I was like, all right, I'm done with this shit. You know what I mean? But, you know... Yeah, but I like him when he was like that battle MC, when he was like that dude, like when he was going against, what was that guy they went against? Mama Say Knock You Out. What was that? He was beefing with Kumo D.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that LL. And then after that, there's a bunch of people that in hip hop and Run DMC, obviously. You know,
were any of those guys starting to inspire you to get into music or like into as a performer, or were you not even thinking about that then?
I'll say Slick Rick would be the closest to that, you know, because I just really admired him. But, you know, dancehall at that time was in a whole little world. I was in a melting pot of New York. You know, I came from Jamaica where Yellow Man was, you know, I saw him for the first time at Skateland and in Afrotree, Kingston, and just thought to myself, that's what I want to be. Mm. He walked into a party. He got there like about 12:30, 1 in the morning, and he sang by 3 songs and walked out, and the whole party left with him. And I was like, what the fuck? Who is this? Yeah. And he was this albino guy, and his presence was so amazing. And it made me what I am, because I keep telling artists now that are dancehall artists that you can't be a star, you have to be a superstar. So you need to have superhero-like talent, because it's not a level playing field. You're in a genre that's only 6% of the market share right now in dancehall. Yeah. You know, you're not going to get the marketing money from labels. You're not going to get radio trying to play you. You're not going to get, so the only way you're going to break through is you're going to have superhero-like talents, you know, and that's what Shabaranks was. That's what, you know, Yellow Man was, and Sean Paul and myself. We had superhero-like talents, you know. It's our presence. It's our work ethic. It's mastering the craft. It's charisma. It's all of that. You have to have all of that in one package. Mm. And that is rare. People put groups together like Spice Girl to get that shit going, or, you know, Take That, I don't know, whatever, NSYNC, to get that shit in one person. And if you think about Yellow Man, that this guy was an albino guy in the early 80s, that made the world stop and take notice to where CBS wanted to sign him and shit like that, in a genre that wasn't even played on radio. This guy was a superhero. You know, he had superhero-like talents. It's incredible to me. So a lot of that I pulled from those guys, you know, and took it into what I was doing in Brooklyn to try and get my own genre going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, out of that, we created dancehall and had a New York movement out of New York.
You talk about Slick Rick being a big influence on you. The thing about, I think Slick Rick, that storytelling thing was incredible. But I think one of the things that that's true of Slick Rick that isn't true of a lot of guys that were around in the era is Slick Rick truly does sound timeless. Like, you know, even when Slick Rick, even if you listen to his old stuff now from that album, it stands up to the test of time. Obviously, the production is different. Mm-hmm. But like whenever you hear a record.
But even the production is timeless because it's still enjoyable.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I mean, they're not bad. You're not listening to that going, this is a bad record. This is like, this is a classic. But him and himself, whenever he's brought out onto a tune with modern MCs, he still sounds like Incandit. Do you know what I mean? There's no issues. But yeah, Slick Rick is just a timeless artist, you know.
He also was a bit ahead of his time in the sort of showmanship, wasn't he?
Totally ahead of his time. Totally ahead of his time. The thing about Slick Rick that blows my mind is I look at Slick Rick like Muhammad Ali. you never got to see him in his prime. Mm. Like Muhammad Ali in his prime didn't fight. He was bad. Mm. So you got him as the greatest of all time, yes. But you only got a piece of him. Circumstances make, we didn't witness him at his prime. We didn't witness Slick Rick at his prime. Mm. But what little he gave us was so fucking magnificent. You know, it's like Biggie. Like we said to ourselves, another great. It's like, damn, imagine if we never got to see Biggie. We never got to see the greatness of Biggie, you know? We could arguably hear say that Jay or Nas or any of that, these guys are some of the greatest of all time. But really, though?
Yeah.
What if? You know what I'm saying? That's how I look at the shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
like Big L.
Yeah, incredible.
Like, imagine if Big L didn't die. What the fuck, bro? You know what I'm saying?
I know.
That's just me.
Yeah, no, but I totally agree with you. I mean, like, you listen to Big L and you think some of the flows and stuff was just so insane, right? It was so incredible.
Check it out. Yo, why y'all standing on the corner, bumming and high? I'm out buying the finest things money can buy. Cats fronting like they holding, but the crabs is broke. Chipping in for $10 bags of smoke. All on my back because of the fame and the wealth. You Mel Groupie, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Plus, I'm running with dogs who bust slugs at the heat. I be the MC who mad chicks be loving to meet. And I'm not just a rapper, I got drugs on the street. I swear you never catch Coleon with lugs on his feet. If you think I'm not nice to whoever, then put your money up. Put your jewels up, whatever. Put your honey up, put your raggedy.
Ahead of his time.
Yeah,
and he was only gonna get better. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like
he was just starting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? My God, bro. So I look at Slick Rick like that. You know what I mean? He was locked up in his prime.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of dudes in jail saying, "Dude, you fucked up." I could imagine me being in jail, being in the yard and watching Slick Rick just go at lyrics, and I being there looking at him like, "Man, you fucked up." And I'm glad he's out and he's, you know, he's doing very well and he's amazing and got his family and all that. But man, you know,
have you ever wanted to work with him or had the opportunity to work with him?
You know, funny enough, I've never met him. Like, I've met Dougie many times. I'm friends with Dougie. But I've never met Slick. And I was actually a fan of Slick before I was even a fan of Doug, you know, because Slick, you know, it, you know, the Jamaican background, the whole shit, you know what I mean? He was a hero of mine. And I think I share that with Snoop too. You know, I met Snoop a couple of times and, you know, and us having conversations. You know, Snoop had him as it's a big deal.
You mentioned Biggie there. Was Biggie somebody you're a massive fan of, I take it?
He was my next greatest.
Mm. Yeah.
After that. You taking him? Oh, you going for something? It's hard drive. Oh, okay, let this hard drive over there. Sorry, man.
It's all good.
No, don't worry.
I got up my studio. I got a full house of people cranking tunes out every night. So it's, you know, we have more than one studios in here. So it's one of that.
Is that your house? Is it, or are you?
This is a house I have in Brooklyn, in New York. That it's only for music. I don't. My kids are not here. My wife. I don't live here. I live in Kingston, Jamaica, in a, you know, wife, kids, and dogs. But this is just music. I've done every single song, almost every song that I've hit within this room. Wasn't me, Angel, all these songs were done in this.
Wow.
Very recorded and mixed in this very room. And I've had this since 1996. And a lot of people have come in and use it. And, you know, Sting's been here. Everybody's been here. And, you know, it's just a spot. So my son is, he's doing his album now and finishing up on some work. So they were here for like the whole week, back to back, just doing their thing, you know.
What is your son's album? What kind of genre?
He's hip hop. It's Rob Banks. I don't know if you heard of Rob Banks.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't put it together. Okay.
I'm in tune, man. I'm in tune. I'm not, you know.
No, mate, listen. We had no... Listen, your finger's very firmly on the pulse, man. I can see that.
Absolutely.
Your son's Rob Banks.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you listen to Slick Rick, you listen to people like that, and then who did you go on to listen to after that? You talk about Biggie.
Biggie, yeah.
Was that your kind of your favorite? Was he your favorite?
Biggie, to this day, I think I would class as my favorite rapper of all time. Again, another guy that was ahead of his time and lyrically was just genius, and of course, Jamaican. So.
Yeah.
It all plays a part, you know what I mean?
What do you think he'd be doing now if he was still around? Do you think, what do you think his journey would have been in the last 15 years or whatever it is?
I think that guy really loved rapping. Mm. He liked it. Yeah. And it was... He liked to rhyme. I think he would have still been a force to be reckoned with. A lot of that would have depended on whether him and Puffy stayed friends. Because I did think as dope as he was, Puffy was a driving force.
Yeah.
In him. I mean, I used to be at, there was a studio called, that we all used to rehearse out of, called Rocket Studio in New York. We were there with Devante and Casey and Jojo. I mean, Jody C at the time, Mary and all of us, and we would be across the other room with me and Maxi Kreese, and you know, just how driven Puffy was. At that time, he wasn't even Puff as we know him. He was working for Andre Harrell, and he was a young A&R, and just the drive of that guy, man, it was is insane. You know what I mean? And so I think he was very much a very big driving force, and why Biggie was that successful as much as he's talented. So provided they stay together, I think he would have been an incredible force to be reckoned with.
Because there was definitely a change between Ready to Die and Life After Death in terms of like the sound, right? It was like, yeah. It was...
He said it the best. He said, I can't talk about what I talk about in Ready to Die. I ain't broke no more. I mean, he said it, you know? You know what I mean? He said, I'm talking about pussy and living rich right now. That's all it is. I can't. He said it. He gave you the disclaimer. He said it in an interview. It's like, yo, man, you know, I can't talk about that shit. I got to be realistic. You know, what am I going to talk about being on the block? I'm not on the block.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to rate his honesty, bro.
Yeah.
He said it. There was a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think if he'd have stayed with Puff, he would have ended up becoming like a... Because a lot of people talk about what Jay-Z's career would have been if Biggie was around, right? Because for obvious reasons, but Biggie was like big. He seemed to be all about the music, and Puff was kind of taking care of the business side of things. It felt like, whereas Jay-Z is a bit more kind of he was a bit more across that side of things as well, right?
I honestly think that Jay would have still been Jay.
Yeah,
there was no stopping Jay-Z.
Yeah.
You know, the two would have had to coexist for different reasons. And if you ask me as MC-wise, Jay-Z and Biggie, they're two different entities. They're two different styles, two different type of MCs. You know, Biggie was closer to a Slick Rick because he was also a storyteller, you know? and his melodies and his flows were just so prolific. Jay made you think. Do you get what I'm saying? So if Biggie's telling you, give me the loot, it's a movie you're watching. It's like a straight out dope ass movie you're watching, and you know, and the ending, and it's a great story. Jay's gonna give you, like I would give it to you. Biggie is New Jack Swing. Jay's Inception in movie terms. Yeah. Like when you watch Inception, you sit there trying to figure out, oh, I gotta watch it a couple of times to kind of figure out what the fuck he was saying here, or how that shit. You know, New Jack Swing, you know what the fuck, you were entertained, but oh, okay, you're entertained. But you could, you know, you ain't got to think about it. The shit is just entertaining. It's in there.
Yeah.
The movie, you know what I mean? Yeah, you know what's happening. You know what I'm saying?
What movie is Shaggy?
Why you got to come with a fucking question that made me think, man? What's wrong with
we can edit it so it looks like you have to, we can edit it together so there's no pause.
Mine would be Shawshank Redemption.
Go on.
Because it's so many things that make that guy, it's almost as if he was being a good guy and just couldn't catch a break. And he kept doing all these things and ended up in the worst situations and just started thinking and got himself out of it to paradise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's how I look at my situation that I've been, because you got to understand, I don't think people will understand what it is for an artist. Like, you weren't even accepted at home. Do you get what I'm saying? It's like when I came to North Carolina, it was like, oh, yeah, he's not Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't look like Jamaican. I'm like, okay, what does a fucking Jamaican look like? You know, it's like, you know, they expected me to have dreadlocks and smoke weed, and I wasn't any of that. You know what I'm saying? I still don't smoke weed and I still don't drink. And I mean, it's like shit like that. And so when I came, if you remember in 1993, everyone said I was it was a one-hit wonder. When I came out with Boombastic, this says, this guy is not worth the vinyl is being pressed on, but yet still it became a massive record. You know, it's shit like that. And then for us, they played you because they had to.
Mm.
It wasn't because Monday morning we sitting down and says, hey, okay, let's put some money behind this reggae guy and blow him up. He was like, no, why would you? And I was like, show me one that has worked before him. You know, yeah, he's like, dancehall, what is that? You know what I mean? So it's that where you keep getting a hit and you keep going and going until you find a way out. And then you start mastering it after a while, you know? So just off the top of my head, I would say a Shawshank Redemption.
It's a good answer. Yeah.
But if I think about it more, I'd probably come up with a different answer. But thanks for that little curveball there. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're just trying to have a relaxed conversation, and Rupert's phoning an absolute.
Just doing my job.
Worldy of a question.
well, Ramesh, what film are you?
Oh, don't, mate, I can't.
I'm joking.
I can't. I'd be like Avengers Endgame.
There you go.
Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, sort of.
Superheroes again, see?
There you go. Legends.
Legends, yes. Tons of legends.
What do you think of, how hip hop has progressed? There's lots of people that feel like there's a disconnect between that sort of lineage that you're talking about and where hip hop is now. And there's other people that think that's bullshit. I mean, what's your kind of take on how hip hop's progressed and where it's come to now?
If we're talking about the craft of it, there's a huge difference from hip hop as we know it and hip hop that's today. Like if you put a current hip hop record with a 90s hip hop record or a 2000 hip hop record beside each other, it's a vast difference. It's almost like a different genre. But if you put a 90s hip hop with like a 80s hip hop, it's not too far. Do you get what I'm saying? Now it's at a place now where it's like, wow, I could get why most hip hop heads would not feel this new shit. And a lot of them won't transcend to the new shit. But with this generation that is here now, what I like about them is that they have now cracked into it to where they are making bank that only white pop music or rock music could have made at that time.
Mm.
They're making top tier money compared to what it used to be.
Yeah.
Now, how smart they are in investing and is to be seen, because I see a lot of dumb shit happening. You know what I'm saying? And you got people like Jay and these guys who are trying to, you know, spit knowledge, because that 4-4 album, 0.4 or whatever the fuck it was,
yeah,
wasn't really an album. He didn't do that for entertainment. He just did that to school motherfuckers. Yeah, because he had some tea that we needed to know, you know, and he just kind of put that shit out there and say, okay, little youngins, y'all motherfuckers need to listen to this, and this is your playbook. You know what I'm saying? That's what I thought it was. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
There was nothing about it that was entertaining, you know? Yeah. And we know Jay, we're talking Jay, 7 summers of fucking party records and shit. Come yeah. on.
I mean, I know this is, yeah, this is, and this was like an album of self-reflection and putting himself out there in a way that we'd never seen before, right?
Oh, clearly, just from that album, he just came out of what you call it when you go in for out of therapy.
Yeah.
clearly, he just came out of some Shalom shit, you know, ayahuasca type shit, whatever the fuck he was going through. Clearly, at that point, that's what happened when you listen to the album. But he was spinning some shit that you should do. And I found myself playing it back last year and finding new shit that he was saying in there that was like, oh, okay, wow, dope. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of what he was saying was coming to play. And a lot of these younger artists, because they're in their prime, they have an opportunity to actually put themselves into a position to create generational wealth and pass yeah. on some greatness, you know? And so that's what I like about where the music is now. I would I credit it to entirely to them? Maybe not. I don't know, you know, maybe Nas and Jay and a lot of them had a lot to do in paving the way and breaking down these barriers, but they're certainly in the position to gain. I mean, you look at, and you look at what Drake is doing right now, he's phenomenal. The guy's like, you know, that's a superhero if you ever seen one. That's this guy's, yeah. He ain't even Jesus. He's just the Almighty God. Yeah, you got to tip your hat to him, man. He's doing his thing.
And do you listen to all of that stuff? I mean, are you still across all of that?
Absolutely. Yep. I listen to shit that I don't even like. Because it's hot. And I take it and I break it down and I analyze it and I find out, okay, why is it that everybody likes this?
Yeah.
And then I start to analyze myself and why is it I am not liking it?
Yeah,
and I use that as an inspiration to create a hybrid version of whatever the fuck I'm coming with that's off the wall and weird, and people like, what the fuck is Shaggy up to now? Yeah.
Yeah. What's your take on, like, with regards to these new artists? What a lot of old school hip hop heads, whatever, your golden era hip hop heads, whatever you want to call it, they sort of feel like these guys aren't giving due deference to what's come before them, and other people just think, well, why should they? This their new doesn't. Why should they give a shit? I mean, do you have a view on that?
It's a generational thing. I don't think it's a hip hop thing or a black thing or a white thing or any of that. It's just a generational thing. This new generation, they're so on their device. They learn everything from their device. You know, they don't even go back into history. History is his story. Now that has nothing to do with me. That's how they look at it. His story. I'm building my story, you know, and that's how they look at it. We admired people before us. That's how we got on. And then we went through the whole situation of legwork and traveling from continents and sleeping in buses and playing bars and doing all of this shit. To when it got to you, you appreciated it and you appreciated who had done it before you. You know, now it's on your device. Now it's that's promo. So I think the level of work to get to where they are, they're making money way too quick. I wouldn't say too quick, but they're making a lot of money really quick. And there's not a lot of work that is put into it for them to appreciate the type of money. So losing it is going to be just like, okay, yeah, I can make more. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to have a rude awakening when they realize that, oh, it doesn't really go. You can't just make more just like that because everything is for a time. I mean, you got to admit, these songs are, of this generation, are probably some of the most short-lived songs, will probably be some of the most short-lived songs of all time.
It's true.
I was talking to one of the top producers and they said, he was actually tripping on, like, Wasn't Me and Bombastic. And I played him some songs. He's like, dude, all your songs are like sinks. That's what he said. They're like sinks. You know, I heard him like Ego commercial, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, wow. Oh, great. Because that's kind of how I made them. Because I want the shit to live on, you know. And he's like, yeah, you got to, if I get one of those, I'm good. Because the shelf life of most hip hop songs that we do is 14 days.
Wow.
I was like, this is fucking impossible. There's no way. And then I went and researched it, you know, from people who were analytic people who, you know, in the record company that I'm dealing with, obviously, because I'm in the game. And they're like, yeah, they're normally about 2 weeks. And then they come off, do high, and they fall off. And I'm like, wow. Okay. You know, and you're going to have a very few of them that are going to be really classic because, and it, especially with Spotify now, it just comes in quickly and go. It's all about feeding the algorithm. You know, it's feeding that beast. So it's really quantity over quality these days. Just keep the algorithm up.
But then, you can understand then why people are just churning stuff out there. But then if they are doing that, it then means when you do have artists, like for example, your Kendricks or people like that who are spending a long time sort of crafting something that they want to last for a long time, it makes that even more impressive than it would have otherwise been.
Well, absolutely. There's going to be the few that do it, you know what I mean? Yeah. But then there are some people who crank them out pretty quick, like Drake, and he normally cranks out some good shit.
Yeah.
And that's why he's God. you know what I'm saying? Because he'll do some shit that is, okay, the streets is fucking with, but then it's a commercially successful record. Now we could look at Future and say, okay, Future got more street shit, but he doesn't have as much commercially successful record as Drake's.
Yeah.
As Drake does. You know what I'm saying? And so when it's all said and done in years to pass, you're going to have that core fan that's going to buy into that Future record that's their shit because they're a fan. Mm. But the people who are not really fans, but they're going to be jamming to your shit because it was that popular, you're not going to have those guys.
Yeah.
You know, like I get a lot of fans who were not Shaggy fans, but they were fans of Wasn't Me.
Mm.
And then they became Shaggy fans because Wasn't Me has taken a life of its own and lived on to, you know, we just got word this morning that we were like number one Super Bowl ad last night with Cheetos on that song. So for me, I got tons of people who are rooting for me or on my shit right now that probably necessarily never listened to a Shaggy record. And they're going back at it now because of this song that was such a commercial success. You know, Drake will be one of those guys that even if you didn't listen to Drake or like Drake, you're going to fuck with it because one of these songs that, you know, started from the bottom, now we up, or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah, you know I mean, one of them is going to fucking be like, oh shit, I remember that jam.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. I done kept it real from the jump. Living at my mama's house, we'd argue every month, nigga. I was trying to get it on my own. Working all night, traffic on the way home. And my uncle calling me like, where you at?
So it's good to have those songs that happen across the board. It's cool you could just have them just happen on the ground and you make mad money, or you happen just urban, or, you know, it doesn't cross over to where it's. I mean, we could arguably say that Jay-Z's first number one record globally was Empire State of Mind.
Yeah.
Now, and look at where he was when he did that record. He was already an incredibly established guy, but really Empire State of Mind was really what got him global. And that's because Alicia Keys was already global. Because Jay, let's face it, I used to be in England, and Jay coming was a niche thing. You know, he was Jay. Mm. You know, he had these records, but he was hip hop. When he got in Empire State of Mind, he became pop.
Yeah.
I thought he was pop when he did Annie. It's a hard night life, but but Empire State of Mind really did it for him globally.
Yeah.
Because I was doing a circuit that time, and I was in, you know, Istanbul and these places, and him and I did a show together in Warsaw. Was it Warsaw? No, Krakow together. And I remember all of that shit. You know what I mean? We're going to Southeast Asia. This shit was huge in Southeast Asia. Mm. Empire State of Mind, you know, Jay wasn't played in them places. You know what I mean? Before that.
Mm. Yeah.
So having these commercially big records, yeah, man, that's where you should look at.
Did you find that? Because obviously, O Carolina was a monster. Bombastic, yeah, was a monster. was that a blessing and a curse for you in terms of, like, you know, you talk about Drake. Drake can have hit, now we're in a culture, a climate where Drake can have hit after hit that doesn't really impact upon his credibility. Whereas you were coming out at a time when, you know, you talk about in hip hop terms, yeah, if you were super big, people like
I sold out.
Exactly. Yeah. So did you struggle with that? Did you struggle with the
absolutely
the whole concept?
Absolutely. It was a big. That's why I said I was in love at home. I would go to Jamaica and I'd sing these songs and people stand up and look at me. But I also did some research and realized that I was in good company. There was another artist that faced the same thing, and that artist's name was Bob Marley.
Yeah.
Where in Jamaica, they didn't really revere him as this king of reggae that he is these days.
Mm.
Because he was just ahead of his time. And I think that's where I was. I was doing these hybrid type of reggae songs. And I did them because they were hybrid. And I did them because I wanted to be different. And but they didn't resonate with purists. But if you, there's a documentary on YouTube right now with Bob Marley and Chris Blackwell and all of them, where they explained how they did the Wailers music, where they hired session musicians to overdub it so they could get on rock radio. which is so weird that those recordings, very recordings, are now the blueprint of what reggae music is.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to get into that headspace, because if I didn't get into that headspace, it would have tore me down, you know, because I ended up leaving out of pop music and went back and did a song called Church Heathen, which was a hardcore dancehall record that became massive, you know, and I know I was going to get pop radio or anything like that, but I did, and I was 19 weeks at number one. It dominated dancehall. And then I thought I was in and realized that they just liked the song that was fucking with me. You know what I mean?
Me a gonna go church from all long, rather sleep through the morning and put on a slam. But me woman, she a pressure me fi go confession. So me decide fi go and kill the conversation. So me see them rather say sister Pam, who a tell me everything about the congregation. Both sister Paulette and her gay husband, and how she still asleep with the minibus man. Sister Gwen claims she a Christian, but last night them catch her in a stone love session. She a do the dirty dance to the Mataran song, and I say she get the thing them from Baby Sham.
But it was a door open. I did other things, like I did my charities in Jamaica, and then obviously the audience came around, and now I'm that guy. You know, I'm just, you know, where all Jamaicans are embrace me, and the core embrace me, and then I'm now quote unquote legend or whatever you call it. You know what I'm saying? But it took that journey, you know, and I had to put myself in that headspace. And I even came out and just did an all reggae album, because they were saying your crossover. I did a Out of Many One Music with me and Sly and Robbie. And I used every authentic dancehall or, I mean, reggae artist that I know to feature with me, from Damian Marley to obviously Sly and Robbie and Barris Hammond and all of this. And you know, I wrote these songs and the record was successful. And we had two massive hits out of it. Underground, of course, because, you know, those weren't pop records. And I realized that when I did that album, that even though it was successful and I did well and I toured, I realized I wasn't making as much money as the pop records. And I was like, man, I don't like this shit. I need to get out of this fucking lane. I get it, you know, I get the credibility part of it, but fuck that. You know, I like nice things. I got to get out. I went and I wrote another song called I Need Your Love. I need your love. I say, yeah, I fuck with this pop money. I learned really, really quick, you know, you keep it real or keep it broke. And I teach this to all my upcoming reggae acts. I'm like, dude, you know, do a balance. Yeah. You do a little of both, you know what I'm saying? Because you're here to get that money, you know what I mean? Yeah. And create generational wealth. And Because there's, you know, there's no pension plan in this shit, man. You create your own pension.
Well, look, we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to ask you, what are you listening to at the moment? What's what you got?
I listen to a lot of old shit. Like I'm listening to some Bill Withers. I'm listening to like some old Dennis Brown as of lately too. Like, you know, I've been going back on some shit, you know. But I listen to everything. I got a little bit of a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, go on.
This is the first time I'm saying this to anywhere publicly, by the way.
This is a safe space, so don't worry.
Yeah, right, motherfucker.
We won't use this for the publicity of the podcast.
I'm a Miley Cyrus fan, man.
Yeah.
I fucks with Miley.
How did this happen? I don't mean that in a, you've been in an accident, mate. I just mean, you know, like, how did that come about?
I like her, the songs she makes as an artist, and her artistry and her don't give a fuck attitude. And it's almost like your modern day Madonna in a way. If I have a dream person to bring into dancehall, it would be Miley Cyrus.
I mean, the set of circumstances that have led the Hip Hop Save My Life podcast to reveal exclusively that Shaggy wants to bring Miley Cyrus into dance. I mean, that's like the stars have aligned here, man. That's like next level shit.
You could do a remake of Shawshank Redemption together.
But I'm listening to her now. I'm listening to a lot of shit. I'm listening to a lot of joints. I like the baby. I listen to baby. I'm listening to the baby also.
He's unbelievable. Like that he can write a catchy. I mean, you talk about sort of huge, like catchy.
That's a guy that would has the ability to make those global pop records.
Yeah, yeah. But also lyrically can spit, right? There's no doubt about that, right?
No doubt. Been over, then I'm working. Call Gunner if you want your Birkin. Oh, baby, you be lining your verses. I be here and say you buying them purses. I can't even lie, you ain't my type. You ain't even know they fine in person. I can guarantee you if you my kind, she got every bag you can imagine. Big house, I can really be bragging. 100,000 in my mouth like what's happening. Not the big cheap tea that's embarrassing. He ain't me, you can keep the comparison. My bitch, probably one of the baddest. Good girl, turning into a savage. This bitch got a problem in traffic. We can't do it, imagine G-Wagon. Low-key, I've been keeping it. If you ask anybody, little babies, you know, the streets would be loving him way more than the baby.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, we're talking about a lot of babies here, but you know. But I like them both, to be honest with you. But I just see the baby has the potential to be, you know, that guy if he, you know, if he plays his cards right, because the type of music that he's making, just from my ear.
Well, look, man, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. What can we look out for from you? What are you working on?
I am. I had to take this down. So this is, see it? What does it say? Yeah.
Spice.
Yeah. Don't say that loud. Let people hear you. you might get some hate mail from some of her fans. Spice is the biggest dancehall female artist. She's on Love and Hip Hop. In America also.
I know who Spice is. I thought that was the name of your new record that was coming.
Oh, okay, all right. Cool. All right. Okay, you get a pass. All right. Yeah. So I'm doing her album.
Right, okay. No, I thought Shaggy's bringing an album called Spice. I know who Spice is.
Okay. So I'm working on her album. I'm almost done.
Yeah.
And the first single is coming out in March. And okay. It's exciting. It's the first time you'll see Shaggy and Sean Paul on a record.
Oh, ooh, shit. Amazing. Well, look, Shaggy, thank you so much, man, for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
All right, brother.
I've always said I consider you to be the Shawshank Redemption of dancehall, so...
You were saying that before he came on.
Yeah, that's all I talk about. So... thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
Hi, brother.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.